So it's get away.
I will open the Joint Interim Task Force on Reserve Funds for January 14th, 2016. We have a number of informational items on the agenda. My understanding right now is we're going to have to keep this to about 30 minutes because some caucuses are being called in about 35 or 40 minutes, I believe.
Great.
On the House side, on the House side.
We know what we're doing on the Senate, right, Richard?
Yeah.
That's where we do.
So the first item, which is the only action item, is the adoption of task force rules. Who's going to come forward to answer any questions on task force rules, or will you?
I can answer questions. Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, the task force rules are just standard for those that for any task force. So again, nothing out of the ordinary for this one.
Okay. Would you like a motion, Mr. Chair? I move the to adopt the rules as proposed.
Okay, any discussion? Only one thing to note, I'm sure you're all aware of this, because it's a joint task force that operates under the same process. There has to be a majority vote from each chamber of the members for anything to move forward from the task force. So, any objection to the motion or any additional discussion? Seeing none, motion carries. We have about four informational items. Who's going to come forward and discuss the responsibilities of the task force?
It looks like our administrator.
I'll do that. again, just a brief memo that outlines the duties of the task force as specified in Senate Bill 800. And again, very specific. And bottom line is there's a number of items related to the adequacy and appropriateness and use of the fund. And then finally, any actions, whether modifications to the Constitution or statute or to management practices that you believe are necessary to address those issues of is it adequate, appropriate, and are the uses as efficient as possible. So, and a report is due to the Legislative Assembly by September 15th of this year.
Any discussion on those? You may note for the record that when this bill was put forward, that except for a couple of you, almost all of you were sponsors on the bill. Not all of you, but almost all of you were sponsors. And it was largely made up of the chair and the vice chair of the revenue committees, the co-chairs of Ways and Means, several other members. But there were a number of people that signed up. We had hoped to get this started in November, but things were so pressing in November, we couldn't get it started. We're only going to have a very short meeting today, but we're hoping to get, I think, a meeting during the short session. And then you probably are aware, because of your discussions in revenue, that Pew is very interested in this and that they're willing to actually provide us any additional resources that we would like to have. I don't know what the limit to that is, but they would likely want to come out here and make presentations or do any research you want would maybe ask for. So. Where is my favorite person? Now, Paul, you're still my favorite person, but my other favorite person is, are you going to do the review of this, or are you going to leave it up to Ms.
McHugh? And does Richard not do that?
I think we're going to invite both of the officers to the table. They can go through the remaining few items.
Co-chair, don't you think this is dangerous to have the two most important building people in the same place at the same time?
Yeah, well, I think actually, if I played poker, I'd prefer to play it with Rocco, because Rocco does not have a very poker face. He
he lets you know what he's thinking. That's right.
I think you've seen me grimace too many times.
So. Okay.
So I think the next item on the agenda was just reviewing some of the background information we provided to you for on the stabilization funds. The first thing is just a document that the Legislative Fiscal Office has had for several years now, and we just recently updated it with new information. And there have been a few minor tweaks to the reserve funds over the past couple of years. But so that's really just background or information about each of the funds and how they've been used in the past. Just for your background information. We also had provided a little summary grid kind of a thing that is a little easier to see some of the differences between the two major reserve funds that we have, the Education Stability Fund and the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. Yeah, there's a separate document, Paul, for that. So we'll probably just work off of that briefly and not take up very much time, since I'm sure you all know how these funds operate. The primary difference between the two, as far as utility of them, is one's a constitutional fund and one's a statutory fund. So it's difficult to do anything other than what is written on the constitutional fund, but because the rainy day fund is statutory, the legislature can change its use or some of the trigger mechanisms if it wanted to, much easier than the Education Stability Fund. So both of the two funds have the same triggers, basically, and again, we're not going to go through those, but they have three different triggers. You just need to hit one of those. Another difference on the Ed Stability Fund is if you don't reach a trigger, the governor can declare an emergency. And with a three-fifths vote of both chambers, then you can access the Educational Stability Fund once the governor declares an emergency. That provision does not apply to the Rainy Day Fund, but as I mentioned, the legislature could pass a bill to change the triggers or the vote requirement if it so desired. The two funds are comprised of different sources of revenue. The Ed Stability Fund gets 18% of net lottery proceeds until a certain level is reached, and then after that it drops to 15%, and the other 3% goes somewhere else. The Oregon Rainy Day Fund is primarily funded by a general fund transfer after the end of the biennium of up to 1% of the previous biennium's expenditures if there's that amount left in the ending balance. So it's a very unique little accounting exercise. After the 13-15 biennium, we're expecting to have a deposit of right around $160 million put into the Rainy Day Fund shortly. This display also shows you some of the caps that are involved in each of the two major funds, and then the Rainy Day Fund, you can only, again by statute, only two-thirds of the beginning balance can be used in any one period, but there are some exceptions around that. So currently the projected balances for the end of the 15-17 biennium, if these funds are not accessed and everything gets deposited as projected currently, there would be $367 million in the Education Stability Fund and $388 million in the Rainy Day Fund that could be used in the 17-19 biennium if they're not accessed before then. And one other thing that we put on this chart is way over to the far right is the emergency fund, which isn't really a reserve fund, but it can be used in that sense because the legislature appropriates money to it, and then the emergency board tends to allocate for the undefined emergency needs of the state while the legislature is not in session. So right now that fund has $30 million in it for general purposes, and there's about $216 million for special purposes that were identified during the 15 session that are sort of dedicated for those purposes, but each one of the special purpose appropriations has an expiration date, and after that date the emergency board can use it for any legal reason that it may have. So that's just a quick high-level summary of the three funds. I think the one issue that And the other thing the legislature can use towards reserve funds is the ending balance. And I think it just comes down to a decision on how much flexibility you need in the system, because the Ways and Means co-chairs tend to get a lot of pressure to fulfill everyone's wants and needs as far as the budget goes. And one way of doing that is to put money in the ending balance, which if something happens in the intervening times when the legislature's not around, that money is still available then to make budget adjustments. The good thing about reserve funds is that, as you can see, they're sort of locked up, and they're not as easy to access as ending balance is or the emergency fund is. So it really comes down to, in my mind, how much flexibility you need in the budget process and how much how much protection from future needs you're willing to put aside in a locked box kind of a thing. So.
Questions? Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the rainy day fund, is there any kind of a rule of thumb or recommendation based on our size of budget biennially? Is 388 good enough, or what should our goal be? Or do you ask 10 people and you get 10 answers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hopin, I think there's no, you know, exact rule of law on this. That I know of, but most people say the more is better, of course. But I think we've always tried to do at least, 3%. When the co-chairs are trying to develop how much they should leave as an ending balance, I think the goal has been around 3%, and we've rarely been able to do that because of the needs of the budget. So I think this last time we left session with, I think, a $324 million ending balance, which is probably the largest we've had in several biennia. As far as the reserve funds, I think that's why caps are built in there, because it's like 5% of
Mr. Chair, Paul Warner, let's say revenue. The Education Stability Fund cap is 5%, and then it's 7.5% on the rainy day.
Rainy day fund. So. And I think the two combined accounts right now with that projection, they're a little over 4%, I think.
Yeah.
A little over 4% of the projected revenues. Mm-hmm. So we're
well under the cap.
We're well under both of the caps right now.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add something to Representative Huffman's question, that, you know, the NCSL used to have a target or a recommended amount of 5% for reserves of, and that's gone through, I think, a lot of changes because of the Great Recession. And Pew has done some work in that area, so we can get some of that for the task force, where they obviously the recommendations are that it's best to be higher than that now, given the experience we've had.
Ken, Representative Huffman, will you finish?
Yes, thank you.
Ken, just to give them an idea, we have the 300 plus million left at the end of the session now. Barring some significant change in the March forecast, which there might be one way or the other, what's our current ending fund balance?
Currently, your general fund ending balance is about $299.5 million.
Okay, so general fund and lottery. Then.
Lottery has gone up a bit, and lottery is about at 36.7.
Okay, so a little bit better.
Right.
So what is, if we're going to leave 1% general fund, what is that? It's roughly, what, about 180?
Yeah, right in that range.
Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to give you an idea of, and we have about $150 million in identified budget problems, which I think we're going to get hopefully down to about half of that.
But yes.
But it gives you an idea of if we're going to leave 180 or 190 or hopefully 200 million in ending fund balance, because we're very early in the biennium, we don't have a whole lot to spend in the short session.
That's correct.
So. One of the items, I mean, I can make arguments on both sides on this. Sometimes we portrayed
our reserves when we're looking at ending fund balance and our reserve accounts much larger, and they look better because we're looking at the reserve funds also, but then we're talking in the future about the reserve fund at a higher level, and that higher level is only possible if we actually are able to make that deposit into the reserve funds. I mean, so in a sense, we're overstating, we're kind of counting the money twice. Like we're saying, well, right now we would have this amount of money if we had a problem, but we're also at the same time saying 2 years out, we're going to have this level of reserve funds, and that presumes that we're making that transfer of payments.
Correct, yes. And the way, so the Education Stability Fund is, as its name implies, is a little more stable because it gets a direct slice off of the lottery proceeds. And so lottery, for a while, lottery was a little shaky, but it tends to be a much more stable and tending to grow source of revenue than the general fund is. So that one's a little easier to count on. There have been years, though, when the deposit to the rainy day fund has not been able to be made because it assumes that you have to have at least 1% of your previous biennium's expenditures, general fund expenditures, at the end of the biennium in an ending balance. And if you don't have at least 1%, then the entire ending balance goes into the rainy day fund unless the legislature diverts it for some reason. So it's that one is much more likely to not get a deposit than the Education Stability Fund.
I put one other issue out on the table. I'm doing this now just to try to, because I'm hoping in our next meeting we can actually get into a discussion. And I'm not trying to bring Representative Reed into the room here. But could you talk about the 10% diversion from the Education Stability Fund that goes into another fund?
Mr. Rocco looks pained.
He wouldn't be pained if he was in a private room. He would be.
Well, Mr. Chair, there are some provisions for money to be diverted from the Ed Stability Fund, and it goes into the Oregon Growth subaccount and the Oregon Resource and Technology Development subaccount. And typically when we report numbers, we don't include that diversion because the money is not liquid. It's invested in ventures, and to date, return on those ventures has been less than robust.
We might get a little more details on that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This may not be the day to do this. Maybe next time when we have a more robust conversation. But one of the questions I would hope that this task force might consider is whether we see reserve funds as being exclusively to make up deficits in times of economic difficulty when our revenues drop and yet we need to maintain program, or whether there is a role for reserve funds of some sort to be played in developing new program, to looking at pilot programs, to things that invest in the future a little bit more than some of the things that we can do now. And they may not be these specific funds. It might be a new fund that we think about. But I just want to put that on the table because we're talking about funds that are generally considered to be for making up deficits as opposed to investing in. I mean, it's kind of like you put money aside for a new roof, which technically protects you against rainy days. But, it's a capital investment, right, that your family has to make. You just put a little, because you know you're going to have to replace your roof at some point. So that's, I guess, part of my question. You know, how do we think about funds that we set aside in terms of planning for bigger investments in the future?
Any additional? I think we're going to move over to Paul, and he's going to tell us about how stable our revenue system is.
That's going to be a short conversation.
Mr. Chair, I've got...
He has a better poker face, too, by the way.
I have one picture for you that shows that.
Well, I've probably seen this
Tell
picture.
The story.
Mm-hmm. Let me see how I move this forward. Oh.
it is.
There's the stability of your job.
Flatline looks real stable.
Well, as you've said before, for the economists, they're accurate over a decade period. It's just not
exactly,
on.
That's exactly right. Yes, and Mr. Chair, if we take the forecast error over this period, and just the sum of the forecast error pluses and minuses, it's less than 0.5% the error. But the standard deviation is about 7%. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, the absolute variation is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think Ken and I's tenure in our position starts about that peak there. So, and I know a lot of you have lived through that up and down period. And it did follow a period that economists call the Great Moderation, where we had the longest expansion in our history from 91 to 01. So there was a period of stability that followed the 80s. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the future will look like this, but it's certainly a big risk given what we've gone through. And you can see that we've gone into a period now that is a little bit closer to trend, which is why we've been a lot closer on our forecast, is we tend to forecast around trend, and we've been pretty close to that, which is about 11% for that period. So what I've done is go through and look at when the reserve funds met the triggers, and this is the reserve fund trigger. The reserve fund triggers are essentially the same. As Ken said, the only difference is that the Ed Stability Fund has the trigger for that you can declare an emergency, governing an emergency, and then you can use it for non-budgetary reasons. But these are the budgetary criteria. There's really two that's around revenue, but there's one that predominantly comes into play, and that's the kind of the inverse of the kicker. The revenue is more than 2% below the close of session at any period during the biennium. So that started out in 01. The 911 was the third quarter of 01. And you can see coming out of the gate for the 01-03 period, we were immediately into the red. The employment numbers, the employment trigger is 6 months of decline, two consecutive quarters, or within the last two quarters or within the 12 months. So you can see the 01-02 recession there carried on, and the triggers fell into play throughout basically the 01-03 biennium and a little bit into 03-05. Council has told us during this period that, for example, in spring of 03, you made some decisions to allocate stability fund revenue that was projected to come in 03-05. And their interpretation of the Constitution was that even though we're in a different biennium, technically, you were still in session, you could still use that criteria. So it was that's why we've got the yes there. So any of those quarters, you would have met the criteria. And, of course, you still need a 3/5 vote. Then you can see the expansion comes in. They're pretty much following each other. You tend to get a quicker response on the revenue side, the revenue projection side, and you can see that. And it tends to carry out longer. So it's often has a longer period of time. Now, the next slide just continues this history. And you can go into the 07-09 period, and all the triggers were met throughout the 07-09 biennia and also well into the 09-11 biennia. And then you see again the revenue trigger lingered a little bit longer into actually throughout the 09-11, whereas the employment trigger ended in the fourth quarter of 10 or just before the end of 09-11 biennia.
And by 09-11, virtually all the reserve funds were exhausted.
Yes. Well, and here's your usage of reserve funds over that period. And what I've done is just taken the red biennia or the biennia where you had a deficit. And by a deficit, I'm just defining that as close of session compared to what the actual was. So I'm using the forecast as your measure of a shortfall. So that doesn't mean you got all the money you need, you planned or you wanted to have, but it's what you planned for when you built the budget compared to what you actually got. So those periods where it's in the red means you got less than was projected in the close of session. And that, of course, coincides with the two recession periods. And then the 03-05 was complicated by Measure 30. As you recall, that was put together by the 03 legislature and then referred and defeated at the ballot. In January, so that created an additional shortage there. the Education Stability Fund was the fund you had in that first period, 01 to 05. And you can see when it was used, about 15% of the 01-03 shortfall and about 46% of the 03-05 shortfall. As I said earlier, 03-05, you were able to reach out and allocate Education Stability Fund revenue that was projected to come in during that biennium, and you built that into your budget. Then if you look at the 05-07, the brief expansion, which of course triggered a kicker, and then the 07 through 11 period, where you can see the forecast deviations, they're added up to about the same as 0103, 0105, but they were spread out across two biennia. The 0103 was almost all in one biennia. We had a projected deficit the first quarter coming out of the close of session, and that's because of 9/11 and the impact of the economy. If you look at the allocations, now you had the RDF was in place in 07. You used that for the 09-11 biennium, $351 million. So you're able to cover about 41% of that 09-11 shortfall through those two reserve funds. So we were getting close to half. And the last thing I did was just go through and sum that up, those periods. Those four shortfall biennia, what was the actual compared to the close of session? About $4.3 billion short. That was the total magnitude of the sum of those shortfalls. Look at the reserve fund allocations. I included $182 million that you made for 11-13 based on your anticipation of going into that session. So put that into it, and it's about a third. So that gives you the sense of how you've used your reserve funds. And given this kind of a narrow definition of a shortfall, defined as what you expected close of session versus what you got, then you've been able to cover about a third of that shortage with these reserve funds.
Question?
One thing I might want to put on the table here, because it goes to some of the questions we've had already. I think actually, in some ways, 0103, the 01 biennium, would be a good demonstration of what happens when you don't have adequate reserve funds. Actually, we did in a sense have a little bit of reserve funds because we had some built up TMSA money.
Yeah.
But we didn't really have any real reserves. And that was the period. That was the period of time in which we changed some accounting principles temporarily, or where we allowed school districts to claim the next payment as to balance their previous. We did the same with community colleges. We actually ended up, people I think that weren't here in that period are very critical of this, but it was one of the first times we've ever borrowed to just operate. But we got to a point where we couldn't cut any more fast enough to reduce our expenditures, so we really hadn't any choice. So even though we didn't legally bind it in a sense, we gave up the flow of money from TMSA, I believe, for about a decade because of that. And it's all that we didn't really have any reserve accounts, which was what led to the creation of the first account. And I think one thing everybody understands here, because they've been in this so long, the Education Stability Fund says education stability. And in theory, it was for education stability. But at least for the time being, our largest general fund expenditure is still the K-12 budget for the time being. And it's one of the largest. So you can put the money into that and still adjust what that overall budget is. So it's actually a stability fund for everything in state government.
So, Mr. Chair, so I just have a question. So based on those years where some of these funds are used, we drew the funds to zero? Did we draw the funds? I mean, I'm trying to understand, was there anything left?
They tried to make them last as long as they theoretically could, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But to give you an idea, and I think it was reflected here, I don't know how, 11-13, because I don't know if you remember, 11-13 we were out of real reserve funds, practically. We were out of additional ARRA funds, practically. We basically took the money in one door and took it out the other.
Took it out.
Took it out.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
The other concern I have is that we are facing, depending on who you talk to and when you talk to them, five biennia where per-employer rates are going to go up, or they're going to be higher than we've been accustomed to, with the result that the effective budget that we provide for K-12 or pretty much anything else will be down, right? Even if the number, the total number goes up, the effective number that will go toward to take K-12 as teachers in the classroom will be lower. And one of the questions that I'm curious about is, what role does something like the Education Stability Fund play in a circumstance like that, where we don't necessarily meet the trigger criteria, and yet we're going to be experiencing a significant shortfall in program because employer rates are going to go up so much to make up the deficit based on the Supreme Court decision?
Yeah. You can put any response before. You can basically just shoot yourself twice. I mean, you can divert the funds to.
It's been so bad.
To not have to pay higher employer rates and then not have reserves.
Right. But I just think that it's a relevant question for this task. Maybe I'm wrong. You and the co-chair may disagree with me, and that's fine. I'm a peon here. But, I think it may be a relevant question for this committee, this task force, to think about. Because we are going to face a situation where, effectively, budgets may well go down instead of up, even though they look like they're going up. Not to be a downer, Debbie Downer here, but, I think it's a real issue.
Yeah, come to the revenue committee, we're always down.
Okay. You're getting about to the time you got to be in caucus, right?
Yep.
One of the things we'll try to do is get a little bit more time for this. It's going to be hard in session, but get a little longer meeting, maybe get some people in here and actually get an opportunity for people to discuss things. One of the things we've tried experimentally, which I don't know if the staff are going to shake their heads here, is occasionally we've had groups like this meet upstairs in one of the judiciary rooms upstairs, where we can actually all sit around a table and talk about things, which is actually a whole lot easier than this environment, since this is more of a discussion right now, and we're not really taking public testimony at this time. We will sometime, but not right now. So if everybody's kind of okay that, maybe we'll try to do that in the next
343
meeting.
343 worked pretty well for that one.
Yeah.
We'll see if the round table works.
Yeah.
It's actually sort of rectangular, but the concept is still good.
Yeah. Any additional thing for the good of the order? Do the House Republicans have a caucus too?
We do. It's not a caucus, but a leadership meeting 8 minutes ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're waiting on the House Democrats to meet and tell us what we need
to know.
The
Senate is very appreciative of the hard work of the House, so we're going to adjourn.
Go to lunch.
I was being in caucus for 2 hours last night. I was being in caucus for 2 hours last night.